Hello, we're glad you found us, and thank you for joining us today for the third episode of First Home California. My name is Rick Lopes. The Department of Real Estate created this podcast to provide you with the knowledge and insights to help you get to a place where you know what to expect during the home buying process and help to make sure that you're ready to make informed decisions about what will likely be the biggest purchase of your life. Each episode focuses on a specific part of the home buying process, so be sure to hit follow on your podcast app so you'll never miss an episode. Today, we're taking a close-up look at how down payments work. We've touched on down payments in both of our first two episodes, but we're taking a deep dive today. Joining me once again is Mike Shankman. Mike is a lecturer in the Department of Urban Studies and Planning at UC San Diego. Go Tritons. Mike also has more than two decades of experience in all parts of the real estate industry, including a lot of work with mortgages and folks who need to make a down payment. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Rick. You know, Rick, after hearing you say all that, I kind of want you to record my outgoing voicemail on my phone when people call me.
Oh, shucks. All right, we're going to start off today with a reality check. The National Association of Realtors in their 2021 survey found that 29% of first-time homebuyers said that the down payment was the most difficult step in the home buying process. I'd add that it's likely the biggest cause of sleepless nights. So, Mike, even though we spent a little bit of time on down payments in our first episode, I think it's important to start today with a three-part question. So here it is. First, why is the down payment important to you as the home buyer? Why is it important to the bank? And why is it okay if you're not able to put down 20%?
Well, and that's, you know, Rick, thank you again for letting me come down here and speak with you and let this be told through California, because I love being able to go over this. I truly believe this is some of the most important information that people want to know. This is what, like you said, keeps people up at night. I want to buy a house. I want to save for a house. I don't have enough money for a house. I mean, people have too many things that they're worried about, and they should be able to achieve that dream of home ownership, especially when we see some of the stats that are out there. So I think the reality is people need to back up, and especially with this one, two, and three, why is your down payment important to you and why is it important to the bank? Those two questions are synonymous. To understand why it's important, you got to understand why, how the bank does look at it. Remember, when we're buying a property, it's all about risk. That's how a bank likes to look at it. Bank doesn't look at you as a human being. You know what they look at you as? Someone who's making payments, a qualified investment. They're investing in you and your property. So in order for that to be a quality investment, they have to minimize their risk to get a good return and, of course, ultimately have it paid back. Well, the bank assumes you're going to foreclose. Let's just get that out of the way. They're going to look at, okay, well, they're going to foreclose. If they think that you're a lower risk of that foreclosure happening sooner or so, they're going to give you a much better interest rate because you're a good buyer to them. And then if they think there's a higher risk, they're going to give you a little bit of a higher interest rate. How does that come in? Well, that comes into play in a multitude of ways. We've already discussed in our previous episodes how mortgage approvals go and credit requirements and what they're assessing. Now it's the equity requirement. So assume your home's going to get foreclosed at some point. They're looking at what are we going to make back? That's where the equity comes in. What do I mean? Well, if you're buying a $100,000 home, I know that doesn't exist anymore, right? But we're just going to use that for an example. I think a little Tykes home might go for part of that. But it's a $100,000 home, $20,000 down payment would be 20%. That means I've got 20% equity in the property. It means that it's not financed. So we would take an 80% loan. So the 20% number is a pretty magical number. You see that all the time. We're going to reference it probably about 20, 30 different times today. Why? Because a bank assumes or anticipates that they will only make 80% of what the home is worth if they have to take possession of it through a foreclosure and resell it. Remember, a bank doesn't want to do marketing work. They don't want to do all this stuff. They give it to an agent, say it's a foreclosure, what we call an REO, and they get rid of it. So they're anticipating that loss. That's where that 20% number comes in. So traditionally, the more down payment, the less risk, which means better approval odds. It could simply be the difference of whether or not you get the loan or not. But the bank is really looking at that 20% number in most cases. And we'll talk about what they do to aid in that risk. But everything is about alleviating risk and loss to the bank.
Okay, that takes care of the first two. But Mike, let's go to number three then. Why is it okay if you aren't able to put down 20%?
Well, if you're not able to put down 20%, you know, here's the goal that you have to remember. Like I've heard people say things like, and we'll get into mortgage insurance and all that. But what I want you to remember is your goal is to do what? Is to acquire the property, to build home ownership. Now, I'm talking about as a first-time home buyer, someone who wants to achieve, and I'll say it bluntly, the dream of home ownership. Why do we want it? Because of so many things. We build equity, we build wealth, we build homes, memories, where we live. You know, again, I remind you guys, I can't, my home, I can't ever take back the memories of, you know, watching my daughter run down the steps or having to sleep on the couch because of an argument. Now, stuff like that, stuff we enjoy our homes for, you know, for what they are. If I can't find 20% down, I can still get the loan. And it's okay, because ultimately you're trying to get your foot in the door. So it's okay if there's other alternatives there to help you get to that point. You just ultimately want to achieve that goal where you're receiving benefit. Remember, benefit on your housing is not just I'm gaining equity every month. It's tax benefits. It's so many other things that come with it. Establishing community, you know. So that's the stuff you got to really realize when you're building a home for yourself and your family.
So here's another stat from the National Association of Realtors that make you feel a little better about the feeling if you don't think you can come up with the 20%. The average down payment for the first-time home buyer, according to the Association of Realtors, is 7%. So 7% is the average. Mike, what else can you tell us about the first-time home buyer as far as stats and how you can break that down?
Ooh, see, this is where we have fun. I'm the stat guy. For listeners, I joked with Rick in the beginning on this because I was like, I'm a numbers person. I'm a research guy. Obviously, I'm a lecturer at UC San Diego. If you're at a UC or any university, I should say, you're a research person, and I'm a numbers geek. And so I love looking at numbers. Professionally, I did it for years, and I love seeing, okay, where are people going? Because ultimately in real estate, and the realtors who are listening to this can relate, sometimes we got to find a way to predict the future a little bit. How can we do that? Well, we come close. How? By studying numbers. So National Association of Realtors, California Association of Realtors, DRE, they all put out information and say, here's numbers of what we're seeing. So here's some more, a little expansion of that. And my numbers say as of 2020, I think this was 2021, we had 34% of all home buyers were millennials. Okay. And of those millennials, 66% of them were first-time home buyers. So where is that important? Well, now I start to go a little further and extrapolate a little more information. And I'm not getting into the whole age brackets of who's who. I'll tell you a little bit of which one. So we generally, I'm looking 22 to 30 for millennials. In that age bracket of 22 to 30, they were putting between 6 and 7% down. You know how much that comprised, that age group comprised of first-time homebuyers? 82%. Yeah. So, and that's traditionally, I mean, and it's funny when you look at, and I want to back up a little here and just show you, when you look at how stats go, and I think even those sitting at home, you should learn to look at news, numbers, information, because it helps you understand the market. We're only empowered as we allow ourselves to be for our own knowledge, right? We have two major groups, okay? What do you think they are? We've got millennials and we've got boomers. We're going to focus on the millennials and the first-time homebuyers, right? Because that's percentage we're really appealing to here. And that's 6 or 7% down. Why? Well, understand, you know, you look at like the boomers and what they're doing. Well, they're selling property. And if they're selling property, what are they doing? They're gaining the equity out of the property they're selling and transferring, and they're putting that into another home, probably in different areas, probably with different amenities, higher quality on different aspects, maybe retirement, whatever. Like I live in San Diego, we love our military, we love our retirees, right? And they're coming through because they have these larger down payments. Now, the first-time homebuyer programs are usually catered around buyer assistance, down payment assistance. So mortgage insurance. You know, a lot of people out there might say, oh, I hate mortgage insurance. We're paying money. I think, Rick, you and I were talking about this. So there was a statement made once that said, well, why would people do mortgage insurance? That's a horrible thing or whatever. Here's what's horrible. Not owning a home. I want to achieve that dream of homeownership, and I want to make it work for me. And sometimes we can set up a situation where we have 5 to 10% down and a bank will lend to you. You might take a small increase in your interest rate, but as you gain equity over those 2, 3, 5 years, you're going to end up selling that home, receiving the equity, and putting it into another property. That's where filtering really comes into play. Unfortunately, I mean, it's the way we've grown. Right? We've had generations that used to buy a home and keep it for what? 30, 40, 50 years, transfer to their kids. They kept it for 30, 40, 50 years. We're just not like that anymore. The average person keeps their home 3 to 4 to maybe 5 years, depending on market conditions, and they buy a new home. And we want you to achieve that dream of home ownership. So first off, get rid of the stigma that you have to do a minimum of 20% down. It's okay if you're comfortable with your payments. What you do is you look at what's in there, see what you can get with your loan officer. And sometimes this process starts months in advance. Call your loan officer. I'm curious about buying a home. If I do, what's my down payment? Can I do less than 10%? Yeah, your interest rate's here, and then you have mortgage insurance. What's mortgage insurance? Well, it's insurance to protect the bank. That's right. You're going to pay a fee monthly to protect the bank if you foreclose. And that's just how it works. There are possibly some benefits to that in terms of taxation, which I'm not going to comment to. I don't know how people do their taxes on these things. What I will say is that sometimes people will include it in the interest rate. They'll say, I'll take a higher interest rate to not have PMI. So then you would check with your tax accountant or your certified tax professional and ask if there's anything that you can do based on your interest. So there's several benefits that you can always work out as long as you're planning accordingly. And the one thing I will say is that PMI, otherwise known as private mortgage insurance, is a benefit to people because it helps them get the loan they wouldn't otherwise be able to attain. And that's a good thing. That's what you're ultimately trying to do. So that's why I always think they're a positive. And based on the numbers, we see that really working out.
Yeah, it's a good point to zero in on because it's one of those things, just like traditionally you think I've got to be able to put down 20%. And the reason it was always, I mean, I'm on the end of the boomer side. I'm about ready to downsize myself. So I certainly know that feeling. But PMI was always like voodoo to us. Like, I can never pay it because I'm just going to be giving out this money to the insurance company like rent. And so I appreciate the fact that you say that because when you think about it, there's a chance you're probably going to be paying less in your PMI payments than you would by putting down that money as a bigger down payment. So to want to get rid of that stigma, I think, is a good thing.
Well, here's the one that'll really shock you and probably a lot of other people. Everybody has it. Every single loan is insured. It's just whether or not you're paying it separately. You know, if you really look at the structure of a loan, all loans are insured in some way. The banks aren't taking the losses directly. I mean, look back at the recession. What happened during the recession? We had an insurance crisis. They couldn't take those losses. The difference is that every bank has some form of insurance, but you're paying an extra one to cover that 20%. And that helps you, you know? So that's where you really want to be, is that every FHA or government loan has a form of PMI. In FHA, it is PMI. In a VA loan, it's called an MIP, which is you pay the upfront mortgage insurance premium and it's built into your loan itself. So, you know, every single loan has some form of an insurance to it. It's just, and people do have this stigma with PMI. And it's like, ultimately, when you're trying to enter home ownership, you have to look at the whole spectrum of what's going to help you get there.
Yeah. So the mindset really should be, forget that being a stigma. It's a way for me to get into a house. It's one of the variables that you have to take into account. Okay, this is how much money I've got to be able to put down. Here's where the options are. Things change. So it's just one of the variables you should consider. You shouldn't think of it as being a failure or that you can't get something if you can't put down the full 20%. So you should just set that stigma aside. It's not important. It's just one of the pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, if our median price, if we're hovering around 850,000 in some areas, right? And I know in San Diego County, I know we're a little bit higher. I'm just going to take 850 just as a roundabout. I don't know many people that just happen to have a little under 200,000 just sitting around to go buy a property. So let's not fault each other if we have less money down.
Yeah, my hand is not up this time.
Yeah, I'm not getting anywhere close to that. So if someone wants to find a way to get me there, I can leave my address, my name, we can all talk. But I'm saying a lot of us don't. And so that's where these programs came from. You know, they came because there is a need there. You know, back in the day, it was all VA and FHA. FHA loans, you know, which had 3.5% down. I say that because I remember when it was just 3. Those really built out the West. The availability of those funds is what really made it happen. So there's definitely a demand there. And the point is, you do these programs to start your homeownership journey. And then you sell the home, buy a new home, refinance, do all these things because you've built equity and now you've used it the right way.
Yeah. So the bottom line, if you have the 20% saved up or you can get your hands on the 20%, that's great. It's going to lower the amount of money you're going to need to borrow, potentially going to lower your monthly mortgage payment. But if you can't make the 20%, there's programs we'll be talking about. There's ways that you can do this with less than 20% is the bottom line. Okay, another stat for the National Association of Realtors, 28% of first-time home buyers use gift money as part of their down payment. With that in mind, it's not unusual for first-time home buyers, I did it when I got my first home, to get a financial gift from family members and then apply that to your down payment. So with that in mind, Mike, what are the rules about gifts?
Well, first rule, ask your lender. Okay, I'm going to give you some general info, But some lenders have different rules on it. I'll be honest. But generally the rule I always followed was, 20% down was your max. And they, a lot of times, sometimes the lenders want to see you invest in that. So they want a percentage to come from your funds as well. If someone gives you gift money, they always have to give you a gift letter, something that the underwriter's going to receive that says this is not needed to be repaid. Why? Because if I give you money, that's what I'm doing. I'm giving it to you. If I'm giving you money in hopes you make payments to me, well, the lender needs to know about those payments. Or if they have an interest in the property, that could create a legal issue for them, a liability. So they want to make sure that they have every single duck in a row. So first off, be very clear about what you're getting. Are you getting gift funds or are they expecting repayment? If they're expecting repayment, that's not a gift. So, and then second, see with your lender if there's any additional requirements on those gift funds. Do they have a cap on the gift funds? Is it capped at 20%? Can they go above that? Do you have to have any equity stake in that? Meaning, does some percentage have to come from you? Can they pay the closing costs as well? Because remember, it's your down payment and your costs. That's the total money that people have to bring in to purchase a home. All these things need to be taken into consideration. The type of loan you're doing, FHA, conventional, VA, here's the deal. You can do a VA loan with a down payment. I think people always miss the point on that. You can, and sometimes get a great interest rate. Maybe if someone has lower credit, they can get a great, loan through VA. And why would we do a down payment on it? Well, because we get a little bit of a better payment by having that money invested in the property. So there's always means we can do things. But you want to make sure first and foremost, you're doing your homework, checking with the lender, seeing what their requirements are and what their restrictions are. Sometimes you have to have that money in a bank for 2 months, which is called seasoning. They want to make sure that it's been sitting in there and it's actually proven that it's yours or it can be traced. Also, the money, Rick, I'm going to make you my dad. Rick's my father right now, right? And Rick decides he's going to give me, I'm going to be your father. I'm Rick's dad. And Rick's going to go buy a property. And so I give Rick $20,000 to buy a home. Well, the bank's going to want Rick's bank account that shows he has that 20 grand from me to him. And they're going to want my bank account statement that shows that that money came from my account and it had seasoning. So we want to make sure down the chain, that's really my money and not, Rick's wife's best friend who decided that she was going to lend the money through me to him because I'm a direct relative and she's not. And believe it or not, these are things people sometimes do. So just have your ducks in a row.
So the last point you raised is, can you only receive a gift from a family member? And if so, which members?
Generally, it's delegated to direct family members. So they want to see it from like parents or possibly siblings, but usually it was always parent to child is what I dealt with. You start getting a little tricky when it's like third cousins and my best friend from high school. I had a situation once on a transaction I was working with where I remember the buyer, I represent the buyer on that. And she was receiving funds from someone who was basically her father, but he was not her blood father. He was someone who had been there her whole life, cared for her. That was basically her dad, but the bank was like, prove the relationship. So, and that came up and we ultimately were able to get that through, but it took some time and effort. We really had to show where it came from. So, you want to make sure that the most important thing here to stress, and especially as the money market gets tighter, which it will do, is that you want to always do your planning in advance with your lender. Say, I'm getting this money. It's a gift. It's from my father, my mother, which are my grandfather, whatever. How is it possible to make this work? And what am I going to need to prove on it? That's the first step you always need to do. Because a lot of times people do this at the end or they scramble and then it's just a recipe for disaster.
There's one other type of deposit during the home buying process that we want to quickly note. Mike, when it comes to the point that you're ready to make an offer on the home, what's a good faith deposit and how does that work into the down payment?
It's your good faith deposit is the money you're securing the property with. Okay. So let's take this a little more simple. I'm buying Rick's car, right? And say, I tell Rick, I'm going to give him, $40,000 for his car. In the process, I'm going to need to do what? Check it, look it over, do things, make sure, carburetor is good, their fuel injection is fine, all tool of things, right? In the process, though, I'm telling Rick, hey, I don't want you selling it to somebody else. So we agree that I'm going to give like $1,000 and we'll put it in a escrow account or a non-interest bearing account, something to secure it, to say that, you know, if I don't perform and purchase this car, there's a possibility I could lose that money. Why do we do that? Because say I make an agreement with Rick, I'm going to buy this car for 40 grand and Shelly comes up and says, hey, Rick, I'll give you 50,000 cash right now, no inspection for that car. Rick can't just go sell it to her because I've already started setting up things to buy it. We made an agreement. We have a written agreement that says I'm buying this car. So now say I don't buy the car. What ends up happening? Rick goes back to Shelly and says, hey, you know what? The car's actually available. And she's like, I'm sorry. I actually bought, you know, Steve's car. The most important thing to key into is in that example, Rick's acted in good faith. So I'm not going to say whether or not I've acted in good or bad faith if it goes south, but there's a good faith deposit. It says, I'm giving you this money. It's going to secure the property and I'm going to do my work to make sure it's the property I'm going to buy. I'm going to make sure I get my loan and I'm going to have my losses limited to this. It's very important you have that. Generally, it's 1-3% of the purchase price. And that's customarily what we do. So if Rick's buying if I'm buying a $100,000 home from Rick, I would be putting anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 down. Now, does that mean I can't do $5? No, if Rick agrees to it, $5 is our earnest money deposit or our good faith deposit. If I want to put down $5,000, that's my good faith deposit. You know, there comes questions later, which an agent or someone can explain to you about what the recoverable amount could be, but we're not going to get into that. The point is to know that in order to secure this property that's going to take you a month or so, you have to put an earnest money deposit down. That is not your actual down payment. Now, can it be applied to your down payment? Absolutely. Can it be applied to your closing costs? Absolutely. See, at the end of the day, you're going to have a whole slew of costs and everything that go into this, and a total escrow is going to tell you. So say I'm buying this $100,000 home and I've got to put 20% down, which would be 20 grand, and I've got 10,000 in costs. So the total money I need to bring to the table is 30 grand. I put 3,000 as the earnest money, 3,000 gets applied to the 30 grand, and I've got 27,000 left. So that's what you got to start thinking. That's also why it brings up on a side point. You not only ask what your down payment is, but how much are my closing costs estimated? Because now you need to start working out some numbers there too. We just start looking at things as a whole.
Great. Now, we've touched on this in our first couple episodes. In our next episode, we are going to take a really close look at first-time homebuyer programs available here in California. But for the purposes of this episode, Mike, can you give us just an idea as far as down payment assistance programs help there maybe out there for folks looking to make their down payments?
There are a slew of them. And what I recommend you do, because I can go down the list, I know you're going to get into real depth on this. As a preliminary stage, you check with your lender that you're working with. Do you know of any down payment assistance? Check with your local housing authority too. Are there any, like here in San Diego, we have the San Diego Housing Commission. You go on their website, they have a whole list of entities that will help you with down payment assistance or where you can even apply with them. The banks have them. I know here in California, we have the Dream for All. You know, I know they've renewed that, ran out of funds within a couple of weeks initially. You know, there's all sorts of programs available now for down payment assistance. And you just need to make sure that when you're researching them, you look at what the terms of the down payment assistance really is. You know, sometimes they'll put a clause in your title that says you have to repay it if you sell the home within X amount of years. Guy, keep in mind, where do these come from? I said go to your municipalities, because the point of their down payment assistance is to make you buy a home in their city. And they want you there because if you live in their city, you're going to shop in their city, you're going to pay taxes in their city, you're going to help to the growth of that city. So they want you to stay there. So check with the city. What are you doing to make me come here? Is there a way I can get down payment assistance and receive that towards my property?
Since we got a couple of extra minutes today, we wanted to share some tips that might help you in your efforts to save money for your down payment. Mike, you've been at this for a long time. So what are the things that you've seen out there that might help folks who are trying to save now for their first down payment?
Well, the one thing that doesn't ever work for me, and that's budget. Okay. But I can't stress it enough. You have to budget. You have to slowly save money. That's the tried and true way right off the top is, you know, every time I get a check, I'm going to put, you know, a few hundred over here or a thousand over here, you know, and especially now, honestly, the one positive of the interest rates going up for many people is that if I have a savings account, I'm making money off the money. So I'll put that money into a high yield savings account or maybe something that says, maybe I can't touch that money for 6 months. If I've talked to my lender and they've said, look, you need this much and you've run the numbers and it's going to take me 6 to 8 months to get that saved, I'm keeping that money in an account where maybe I'll take some of it, put it in a high yield account. In 6 months when it matures, I pull it out and I put it towards the down payment on my house. You know, you budget your money accordingly. You know, if you're old enough to buy a house, mature enough to buy a house, you're mature enough to save for that house. So that's your first test of being able to budget. If you don't know how to budget, well, guess what? When you buy the house, you're going to learn how to budget real quick. So that's your primary one. Set your savings account. Try to get money off the money if you can. And then also call your tax advisor. If you can time this when you're getting a tax return too, that's a great way to take advantage of those savings. Because guess what? When you make your, when the government's taking your money in your paycheck, they're setting up a savings for you right there. They just give it back to you. So that's a great way to plan these things out. Say, hey, maybe in 6 to 8 months, we'll save $1,000 a month. And guess what? When we get to March or April, we're going to get our return. We've got our down payment right there. So we've done our planning in advance. And that's the oldest tried and true way to make that happen. It's just a matter of looking at where we can go.
Great. Well, Mike, thanks. That gives us some good tips and also a good look at down payments. Any final thoughts or key takeaways that we should take from this episode?
It's just your planning in advance. You know, home ownership is something that it should be, as we've done these episodes, it's revered for us. It is the true dream that a lot of us have because it shows our what. As we like to say, it's adulting at 100. Well, it's adulting on speed, you know, where we finally have achieved the dream we want. And if it's one thing that I love looking at stats, the millennials have proven, you know, the difference, what are millennials doing different than like our generation did? They're getting married later. They're having kids later. They have more disposable income. And that's the truth. You don't have to be like we used to say, find a partner, get married, buy a house. Here's the reality of it. Find when the time works best for you. You don't have to have someone else there necessarily to do it. You know, so one thing I truly admire about that generation, they're saying, if you were to sit in my class at UC, when I teach, I always bring up the millennial stats and I go, any of you married in here? And I swear they all get this like white look on their face. They're terrified. And I go, you're smart. They're educated. They have more disposable income. They are planning their futures. So you guys who are listening to this, I commend you. Now take that and apply it. Go buy a house. Become rooted in the communities. And guess what? Use that as a means to acquire more wealth as you move forward. Keep in mind, you're going to go up and your value is going to go down. But just like any investment, you should eventually see the return you hold on to it long enough. But it all starts with the responsibility that you take to start budgeting and creating what you want.
Great. Great information, great tips, great inspiration. Thanks very much. Mike Shankman, thank you for being with us today. And actually, for the first three episodes, it's been great having you with us. And we were going to look forward to seeing you later on in the season. We've got some more thoughts that we want to get from you on some different topics. So that is going to do it for our episode of First Home California. Thank you for listening. Be sure to click your follow button on the podcast app so you will never miss an episode. We also invite you to go to the First Home California page on our Department of Real Estate website. The address is dre.ca.gov/First Home California. I'm Rick Lopes, and you've been listening to First Home California, a production of the California Department of Real Estate.